Good morning. This is Dallas Townsend with the CBS World News Roundup. Ayatollah Khomeini this morning announced his choice for the leadership of a provisional Iranian government, thus in effect throwing down the gauntlet to Prime Minister Bakhtiar. Khomeini has picked Mehdi Bazargan, a Muslim nationalist and longtime opponent of the Shah, as provisional prime minister. Khomeini wants the regime to serve until a referendum supervised by officials of his own choice. Richard Roth reports from Tehran.
Up to now, the confrontation between the religious leader and the prime minister has been limited to a test of wills, fought with rhetoric. But the appointment of a provisional government, a shadow government in effect, escalates the competition for power between the two men. A provisional government will give public and private employees who have been on a general strike for more than a month a clear-cut choice to pledge allegiance either to Khomeini or to Bakhtiar. The prime minister has vowed he will not act against a government named by Khomeini unless its members attempt to usurp his power. But Bakhtiar has also said, as recently as last night, that a situation in which there were two competing governments here would be intolerable. Richard Roth, CBS News, Tehran.
Iranian military sources, quoted by the Reuters news agency, say Khomeini has won the support of several thousand officers who either retired or were purged from the armed forces because of opposition to the Shah. Sources say these men are willing to give public support to Khomeini's political moves. Former Secretary of State Henry Kissinger, speaking in Los Angeles last night, came up with a depressing assessment of the Iranian situation, and we'll hear about that from David Dow.
In a speech and press conference, Kissinger warned about a wave of radicalism sweeping the Middle East, including, he said, Iran, and said if its spread continued, it could negate some of the gains of any treaty between Israel and Egypt. He said the timing of U.S. pressures for human rights reforms was one of several factors contributing to Iran's current instability, and his assessment of the future was equally gloomy.
If present trends continue, that in 2 years, Iran will be less free, less prosperous, less pro-Western, and on the whole, less moving towards modernization than was the case previously. We're only at the beginning of this political process. This process didn't end with the Shah's departure. It began with the Shah's departure.
Kissinger later spoke at a fundraising dinner for the Cedars-Sinai Medical Center, whose guests included former President Gerald Ford, former California Governor Ronald Reagan, and the current governor, Jerry Brown. Three men, said Kissinger, willing to step into the sneakers of Jimmy Carter and make Billy Carter a one-term entertainer. David Dow, CBS News, Los Angeles.
Kissinger did provide one encouraging note. He predicted an agreement between Israel and Egypt within the next 2 or 3 months. After a remarkably strenuous week, China's vice premier is now preparing to end his visit to the United States. Richard C. Hotlett has the story in Seattle.
In a matter of hours, Deng Xiaoping will leave Seattle for Alaska and home. He will go to the airport straight from a last meeting with Northwest editors and publishers. 7 days of work, and even the socializing was work, have left little trace on this man of 74, which is worth noting. His policy of making the commercial and technical connection with the United States in an atmosphere of political harmony rests primarily on his own shoulders. The Chinese say they are delighted with the reception they've had, and they think that Deng's amiable public performance in the American style, rodeo and all, has gone down well in China. There is dissent in both countries, and Deng has made a few references to Mao Zedong and even one to Stalin, apparently to head off hardline critics in Peking. Both Deng and President Carter have emphasized the differences that remain in social system and political belief. Deng came to the United States to help modernize China, not to Americanize it. The cities he's visited, the people he's met, appear ready and willing to provide that help. Richard C. Hottle at CBS News, Seattle.
The Senate Foreign Relations Committee this morning opens hearings on the Carter administration's policy toward Taiwan. And as Phil Jones points out, there are going to be some prickly moments.
Senator Frank Church, the Foreign Relations Committee chairman, has already put the administration on notice that he is not the least bit satisfied with the Carter legislation spelling out future U.S. cooperation with the Chinese living on Taiwan. Specifically, Church will say again today that there must be legislation stating flatly that the U.S. expects the government in Peking to settle the issue of reunification with Taiwan peacefully. Democratic Senator Stone of Florida has also charged that the administration's bill on Taiwan is lacking in several areas, the first being that it does not provide sufficient security assurances to Taiwan. It will not be smooth sailing for the administration today, for Senator Church has already indicated that he sees the proposed legislation to be, as he puts it, woefully inadequate, ambiguous in language, and Church will have a blunt warning today that unless the administration witnesses show that their legislation is stronger and clearer than it appears, then the Foreign Relations Committee of the Senate is prepared to take its own action to clarify and strengthen the Taiwan legislation. Bill Jones, CBS News, Capitol Hill.
Secretary of Defense Harold Brown and Deputy Secretary of State Warren Christopher are scheduled to testify at today's session. Farmers from around the country are converging on Washington today, demanding that Congress do something about the low prices they get for their products. Diane Sawyer tells us about them.
The farmers have come from as near as Maryland and as far away as Oklahoma and Texas, men and women of all ages with a common cause. They say crop prices are so low that America's small farms are being threatened with extinction. The farmers say their income has not increased by anything like the 7% the president is allowing factory workers, and their equipment and energy costs have skyrocketed. They say, too, that only a tiny fraction of increased supermarket prices goes to the farmer, and the rest is a windfall for greedy middlemen. Some of these men and women have been on the road over 20 days, rolling their bulky tractors across the nation's highways in anticipation of this day. They say they'll stay here for weeks and months if necessary until the government raises price supports. Many of them are inspired by the conviction that this protest is not a selfish one, but rather an effort to preserve America's historic economic base and tradition of individual initiative. One woman said, "City people don't understand. When America's small farmer declines, the country isn't far behind." Diane Sawyer, CBS News, Washington.
The farmers' tractors and other vehicles already are lining up along the mall between the Capitol and the Washington Monument. Many of them, in fact, entered the city before the rush hour. Nevertheless, highways have been snarled in several areas. The farmers have blocked a freeway and one of the Washington bridges. Department of Energy officials are due to appear this morning before a Senate inquiry on emergency fuel conservation procedures. And Nelson Benton has details.
David Bardeen, who is in charge of Energy Department economic regulation, is scheduled to testify on measures ranging from outdoor lighting restrictions to save fuel to gasoline rationing. Subcommittee Chairman Bennett Johnston claims that congressional authority for emergency conservation plans, including rationing, has been on the books since 1975, with the plans still in preparation. Energy Department officials say the plans will be ready for President Carter's approval in a couple of weeks, after which they will be sent to Congress. Bardeen will give general information on them to inquiring senators, a department spokesman said. Nelson Benton, CBS News, Washington.
George Herman reports that the administration's wage price guidelines, and in fact its whole anti-inflation program, will be under attack today in several House committee rooms.
Economists from the National Center for Economic Alternatives will testify in one that inflation in the four basic necessities of life, food, shelter, energy, and medical care, was 10.8% last year. They'll point out that the administration guidelines do nothing about basic prices for food and energy supplies and do not restrain high interest rates, which are pushing up housing costs. They'll argue for special, narrowly targeted programs to attack inflation in each of the key necessities. In another hearing room, experts from Congress's own General Accounting Office will testify that the administration probably does not have legal power to refuse contracts to firms that defy the wage price guidelines. In the Ways and Means Committee room, more discussion of the real wage insurance program designed to bolster those wage guidelines, with the committee not likely to decide soon whether to approve the concept. George Herman, CBS News, Washington.
Most of Israel was blacked out today by a power failure. Much of the power was restored 2 hours later, cause not determined, but officials do not suspect sabotage. The U.S. dollar was down today in Tokyo and weakened against all the major European currencies.